BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from NFL playoffs to pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE to receive your rewards. That's BLEAV, BELIEVE, to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. What's good, everybody, and welcome to Believe in Celtics, brought to you by Bet Online. Insane news as we get on air to record that doesn't involve the Celtics directly, but maybe could help the Celtics. We'll see. My guy Gary Washburn here from the Boston Globe. We're still kind of here chuckling and reeling a little bit about this one, so we're just gonna jump right in, man. But again, as always, make sure you're following us on Twitter, @GWashburnGlobe, Michelle Sports NBA. But let's tap in, man. As we hit the air, Gary. Big trade you brought to my attention, literally as we were hitting record on this joint. Kyrie Irving traded to the Dallas Mavericks after requesting a trade earlier in the week. Full details of the trade still being sussed out, but as we have it right now, Kyrie and Markieff Morris head to Dallas. In exchange, Brooklyn Nets get Spencer Dinwiddie back, in addition to Dorian Finney-Smith and a 2029 first-round pick and some 2027 second-round picks and a couple other second-round picks as well, too. But the crux of the deals are the players here right now. Kyrie and Markieff Morris for Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith. Your initial reaction to this one here, for both sides, you know, let's take it from the Dallas side, because obviously it means a little bit more to us on the Brooklyn side later on. So we'll save that for a little bit on the next side. But for Dallas, what's going on here? Luka gets his help, but is Kyrie the answer for that equation?
Yeah, Warren, I think that this is a kind of a really risky move for the Dallas Mavericks. One, you give up two core guys in Finney-Smith, who I've always liked, has turned himself into, I don't know if he was a second round pick or even non-drafted out of Florida several years ago, into a really your consummate 3-and-D guy, the guy who can shut down, you know, opposing leading scorers and also hit the three from the corners and kind of add a little offense there. I always liked his game. Dinwiddie has improved over the years and gotten healthy after the ACL and has been a pretty good player for the Mavericks. You give up two starters for Kyrie and Luka, and one, you only got one basketball out there, Warren. So who's going to play off the ball? Is this better that Luka plays off the ball sometimes, can post up a little bit, maybe, you know, but he's not really a spot-up shooter. So, like, you know, do you post him? What do you do with Luka off the ball? Because a lot of his creativity is from the dribble. And then that's the same thing with Kyrie Irving. So I don't know how that goes. Dallas does get more star power. You know, this is a team that's been, for whatever reason, Warren, and there's certain franchises, like, we know that free agents aren't going to go to Utah, Indiana, you know, some of these other teams, maybe Memphis at times. Memphis has been in that discussion, Portland, at, you know, major free agents. Dallas is one of those teams, Warren, that, you know, like Washington or Atlanta, or, you know, that for whatever reason, major free agents just don't vibe with Dallas. And they've haven't, you know, they got DeAndre Jordan after he, you know, did the whole, like, left him at the altar the year before or whatever. They finally got DeAndre Jordan, but he was on his way down. He was in declining. They don't get those, like, you know, max guys, right? Tim Hardaway Jr. got through trade with the Porzingis. They're like, so this is a chance for them to get another legitimate all-star player, okay? And that's good for the Dallas, but does it help them win? Can you take on the Western Conference competitors with Luka and Kyrie? Okay, one, neither is very good at defense. They'll try, and you trade away, Warren, your best defender in Finney-Smith, and then who else is out there? You're going to run Hardaway out there, probably back into the starting lineup. Obviously, Christian Wood. The young green kid from Arizona has been kind of emerging. I don't know what Dallas has besides, like, that's a good dynamic duo, but what else is there? And can you really say this makes them a competitor to win the West? I don't think so. It makes a competitor to be entertaining, to score a lot of points, to have two guys who can go for 50 on any given night. That's, but the Nets were like that, right? With KD and Kyrie. So, but you got to have some substance. You know, you can't, you know, you got to have some meat on that sandwich. You just can't have two high scoring guys. You got to have some defenders. You know, Christian Wood, this puts a lot more pressure on him. And he's a free agent this coming up, you know, I believe. So for Dallas, Warren, this makes them different. I don't know if this makes them better.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think they're, like you just said, they're just different. Is it just a different way to slice the apple here? Kyrie and Luka start. Then, like you said, it's Tim Hardaway, I guess, at the three. Reggie Bullock, maybe.
Didn't mention him.
Yeah, maybe, you know, again, kind of squinting to see, can Markieff, who they get back, do they put him into starters minutes? That seems foolhardy. They're waiting for Kleber to get back.
Kleber, I'm looking at their roster, Dwight Powell. You know, Kleber's hurt. Now, the kid that I think will benefit from this, Warren, is Jaden Hardy, the G League Ignite kid who – has kind of come. He's the reason why they kind of bumped off, unfortunately, for your Celtic faithful, Kemba Walker, because they wanted to give Hardy more minutes. I saw him in person score like 15 points in about 8 minutes against the Celtics. It was garbage time. But the kid, I think this is a chance to give him. He's only 20, but to give him an opportunity. But if we're talking about Warren competing this year in the West. Now, if Dallas has some more moves up their sleeves before Thursday, I'd say okay. Other than that, you traded your two guard and a solid score in Dinwiddie and your best defender for a guy who, you know, and I think Kyrie will be on in his best behavior. And honestly, too, on the personal side, I think Kyrie's oldest child lives in the Texas in the Dallas area too, so maybe that was a kind of a lure for him to want to go there. I know he has an older daughter, if I'm not mistaken, through knowing him through my Celtic day covering when he was his Celtic days. He does have a daughter who lives in Texas, so maybe that's a kind of a lure to be close to her. But for me, I just don't see. Like I said, I see Dallas being interesting to watch, fun to watch with those two guys, but contending, beating Denver, beating teams with real depth, no.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dallas Mavericks make a big move. Mark Cuban signs off on it. They get Kyrie Irving to pair him alongside Luka Doncic. I mean, like you said, it's going to be exciting from in terms of backcourt. You know, all those, you know, those aggregate accounts, the best backcourts in the NBA, they'll have a lot of fun to kind of run with some of those kind of comparisons here now. But from a basketball sense, long-term with Dallas, unless other moves are to be had, and here we're recording this literally minutes after the trade was announced here on Twitter, we'll see where Dallas lands. So let's switch gears here to the Brooklyn side and more or less and kind of how that Brooklyn side now impacts the Boston Celtics. Brooklyn was a fierce and staunch competitor to at least in theory in terms of the standings, although the matchups themselves have been obviously leaning toward Boston's favor here recently. But when it comes down to playoff time, I think Celtics knew that they might have to see Brooklyn again. The Brooklyn Nets now are very different and have a roster that's awkward. I think Shams is out here reporting like it gives them still a chance to be competitive, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess, you know, obviously it depends when what happens with KD and what they ultimately do. We were talking off air. I don't know how the Ben Simmons of this all fits into this equation now with Dinwiddie, who will probably need to be ball dominant as well. You still have Seth Curry. You have Cam Thomas kind of coming into his own here, even in these last couple of games with KD out. I guess they have no problem just kind of relegating him back to, you know, spot rotation minutes. But from the Brooklyn side, is this still a top ended Eastern Conference team is as currently constructed? Like, what are your early thoughts here? Again, these are early folks, so we're just kind of balling.
Yeah, it all depends. I think Cam Thomas is a very interesting case here. He had 43 points against 44. The Wizards. He kind of carried him in the second half. I mean, you know, we could talk about the Wizards blowing a 20-point lead against Portland at home and then blowing a 23-point lead the next night. I think I read the Washington Post with Ava Wallace, like the first team in 20-plus years to blow consecutive 20-point leads on consecutive nights.
And they just won six straight.
Yeah, and they just – but they wizarded it again. You can't lose to a chaotic Nets team without KD or Kyrie. I mean, if you want to try to make a playoff run. But, okay, I think the Nets here, I think they're like, you know what, let's get the hell out of here. Yeah. We're done. We're tired. 3.5 years of chaos. It was, you know, Rick Grusbeck and Brad Stevens are doing backflips and high five. They're doing the kid and play with each other right now over Kyrie's decision to opt out and leave. Because I just think that they saw what he did to Brooklyn and he just left that place a wreck. Okay, so you're looking at Dinwiddie. I like him as a player. He's got real guts. He plays hard. He's a guy who was a second-round pick, blew his knee out, has come all the way back in terms of, like, making a good career, because I remember in his draft, he was telling everybody how good he was going to be. And everybody, I remember talking to scouts who was like, boy, this Dinwiddie, he loves himself. He, like, you know, he bet on Spencer, you know, he bet on himself. And he's turned himself to a quality guard. Okay. So I think him being in Brooklyn before, his familiar surroundings, I think he'll fit right in. Finney Smith's a guy that's why you signed Royce O'Neal. Yes. They're the same guys. I told you, we talked off air. They're the same guy, right? The 3-and-D guy, a guy who's going to, you know, he'll hit that three when he's open. He can dribble into the paint. He's got a little athletic, you know, Finney Smith's got athleticism. But his job is to, okay, my man, guard Jason Tatum, guard DeMar DeRozan, guard, like, his job is to guard, you know, go out there and check Zach LaVine, go out there, whatever, right? So does Jock Vaughn play both of those guys? And then where do you play, as we talked about, where's Ben Simmons in this? Because you can't have 2 to 3 guys who aren't really offensive.
Yeah.
Claxton, who is emerging, he's a fixture there now. Do you put Joe Harris or Seth Curry in the lineup over Dinwiddie? Or Dinwiddie's your point? If Dinwiddie's your point, then is Simmons coming off the bench? Do you, like, a lot of decisions here. And a lot on the fly if you call yourself wanting to compete in the East. Now, it might work. They still got guys like T.J. Warren. You know, Patty Mills is still there. You know, they got guys. But I just think this gives them two more guys who are just going to be reliable and play ball. Like, I don't know if this makes them better. They were 4-7 with Kyrie without KD. But if you're thinking Claxton, KD when he comes back, Dinwiddie, okay, so do you play both Finney Smith and O'Neal? What do you do with those guys? You have two guys who are kind of the same, looks like the Spider-Man meme. Like, they're basically the same type of player. So I just think the Nets are thrilled to get Kyrie the hell out of town. They're packing his bags. They're calling his Uber to the airport. They're setting all that up. But I also think that this doesn't make them necessarily better. It just makes them more reliable. And that's it. What happens with TJ Warren? What happens with Simmons? You know, they got guys, but those guys are going to really have to come together now, because you don't have that reliable second scorer. You have Dinwiddie, Joe Harris. Like, what happens with Joe Harris? Do you start him in the backcourt with Dinwiddie? Or do you play Simmons? Or do you play, you know, like, what happens to this team? Or Seth Curry? Yeah, like, who? It's a lot of guys who are good but not great.
Yeah, you know, Gary, I think as you're talking, two things kind of come to mind. One, Jacques Vaughn, I feel for you, my guy. listen, you bided your time. You finally got the head coaching gig, got them rolling in the right way. KD goes down, and all hell breaks loose.
You feel bad for Jock.
Jock cannot catch a break, and now, as you allude to, this roster, because I think what ends up happening here is you have to try to now manage a team that, as you alluded to, have very similar skilled players, and maybe not all at the same position, but talent-wise, like, there's a lot of duplicity in that. You know, are Seth and Joe Harris kind of the same in what they do? Do you need them both? There's still Patty Mills on this team, you know, mind you, as well, too, right? Now you bring Diddy Woody into us. You got Simmons going on with whatever he's got going on mentally and physically, you know, trying to figure that out. And now you bring in, you know, Finney Smith to pair alongside Royce O'Neal. Claxton is emerging. It's just a lot of guys. TJ Warren still battling injuries here and there. You got to play Cam Thomas.
So where does he go? Like, you got a lot of guys. Like, if I'm Brooklyn, honestly, I just go Cam Thomas. Dude 21 or whatever he is. He could score. Now, does he ignore other parts of his game? Yes, but – why you play to me? Like, I just go all Cam Thomas all the time. I give him 30 minutes a game. Now, if he just falls on his face and can't defend and all that, but you got a lot of guys, as we talked about, Warren, you just said, a lot of guys who are pretty good players but not great. Do all those pretty good players make you a contender?
Yeah, and I think, again, that's what I'm saying with Vaughn. How does he manage it, and how did you manage those egos? Because, you know, if I'm Finney Smith, I'm just like, well, you know, who the hell is Royce O'Neal? You know what I mean? Why should I have to share my minutes with him, so to speak? Again, and it can be done. It can be done. I don't know these guys as individuals and their overall characters, so to speak. And maybe they will just kind of all acquiesce. But to me, you've given Jacques Vaughn another problem, in essence, to handle, even though Kyrie was the biggest issue and probably the headache in modern NBA history in a lot of ways, despite all the talent that he brought, you know, to that team and that roster. So what it means for Boston now is, at least in theory, there's one less elite team on the table, at least for right now. Right? I think we're going to need Brooklyn to figure out some things before we consider them back in the upper echelon part of this conversation, where they fan. And again, they can still make other moves and all this stuff before Thursday. And, you know, maybe there's more things to come. I think if you're Boston, you can't really be worried about what other teams are doing, but you look at a move like that and you're like, all right, well, cool. That's you got those problems. Now we can try to focus on, you know, on ourselves. What I want to take us to here now is, over the last week, obviously they're 1-1, handled Brooklyn ceremoniously. So I think a lot of jokes, you know, from Celtics Twitters, you know, and again, I'm sure now after the Kyrie date, has the Boston Celtics ended the Brooklyn Nets era with Kyrie and KD kind of officially? A lot of those conversations happened over the course of the summer after the sweep in the first round. Brooklyn ultimately obviously came back, but now they are going to obviously be breaking up that duo. Tough game against Phoenix for the Boston Celtics. I think I said coming into that, I was like, the Suns kind of owed them one. But at the end of the day, that was still a winnable game. There's some issues with the offense here. There's still the non-Tatum minutes are starting to look a little scary, I think, for the Celtics as well. But really quickly, because we got a lot to get to still, too, obviously, with the Celtics part of the trade deadline as well, too. But your quick thoughts here on not necessarily the Brooklyn games. I think we talked enough about Brooklyn, but just what happened against the Phoenix Suns for the Celtics. And then we'll move into some trade talk.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought the Phoenix game was another disappointing performance, a team that they should have beaten. I thought that they jumped out to that 7-0 lead, and it looked like okay. And I think Phoenix started the game 0-9, so it looked like they just weren't into it. The Celtics jumped out, and then all of a sudden Phoenix scored the next 12 points, then went 15 for the next 20, and the Celtics lost all control of the game. And, you know, I think it's the whole notion, if we talked about Warren, giving those teams confidence.
Yeah,
like it was not only Mikal Bridges, who I thought was very good, did a good job on Tatum. Tatum just wasn't himself. It might have been one of those games, Warren, that you might want to give Tatum the game off. Like, I just think this looked like Tatum was just not into it. And it might have been physical, where he's like, hey, man, I'm just tired, you know. But this might have been one of those games that you probably were better off without Tatum. Not to say he was a detriment, but he hit three field goals in the game. He hadn't had that fewer in 104 games. So he just was himself. And then he didn't get a lot of help from, you know, Horford. Grant Williams, I think, played 22 minutes, did not score. Like, they just didn't have the production. And then they let guys like Damian Lee, Ish Wainwright, Saben Lee. Like, you let the, you know, because Chris Paul wasn't brilliant. It wasn't like, whoa, Paul had 27 points, you know, 15 assists, 8 boards. Like, Paul was solid. Bridges was good. Ayton scored 8 points early and I think finished with 12 or something like that, maybe, right? 12, 4, I want to say it's 12. He got off. It was like, oh, boy, they're going to need. But it was like Jock Landale, like the you let the little homies get off on you. Yep. You know, you let guys get confidence, and that's what you can do. That's what happened against Oklahoma City. If you look at the pattern of Celtics losses, it's some of these guys getting off early, 7, 8, 10 points, couple of 3-pointers in a row. You look at the two Orlando games, Admiral Schofield, guys that were like, you got to really be a good NBA fan to know Damian Lee and Ish Wainwright. You know, former college football player Baylor, who ended up making the switch to basketball, like Saben Lee, guy on a two-way, like
they just got him too.
it looked like they got discouraged. And what I don't understand about the Celtics, Warren, is sometimes their mental fragility, where they tried the whole third quarter to take the lead. They couldn't. They trailed by 1 at the end of the third. Malcolm Brogdon has one of his patented little floaters. He missed it. That would have put him ahead, and that was it. They were done after that. Phoenix goes on a 14-2 run with their bench, with its bench, right? It was not Chris Paul. It was not Ayton. It was their bench dominating the Celtics early fourth quarter. The Celtics couldn't recover. And to me, you got to be tougher in that situation. You got to be tougher. You got to, you know, you can't, one, let this team get confidence, and two, when you got a chance to take the lead, because it just seemed like, Warren, if the Celtics had gone up by 5 or 6 points, then you're like, okay, Phoenix has got to put together 2 to 3 consecutive good possessions to try to come back. Are they capable? You're putting all the pressure on the Suns. The Suns never relinquished the lead.
Right.
And then I said, so I thought that was one of the more disappointing games, because besides Marcus Smart, a fully stocked roster, they scored 94 points. And, you know, Phoenix just out-hustled them, got offensive rebounds, outplayed them. And I'm just like, you got no Cam Johnson, no Devin Booker. You know, you can't look at that and be like, oh, we got this. And right. Then they went up, oh, the 7-0 lead. It's not football. 7-0 is, like, that's nothing in the NBA. A 20-point lead. The Celtics trailed 53-33. They made that up and caught them midway through the third quarter. So you can't think just because you punch first, the team's not going to respond. So I just thought it was a disappointing effort all around. It wasn't like Devin Booker played and went for 50 or for 70 or
right.
Phoenix played out of their minds. Whereas it's one of those nights. Like, the Phoenix played a solid game. They played they're well coached, we know, by Monty Williams. They had a good defensive game plan against Tatum. Tatum looked like he just wasn't into it. And then besides Jaylen, no one really helped out. No one, you know, Grant, we talked about. You know, Robert Williams was okay, but something was missing that night, and it was a real for them. When you are trying to win the East, and here comes Milwaukee, and here comes Philly, yep. Those are the games you got to win. You can't lose at home to a team that's shorthanded like that. And they're scheduled, like, now they got Philly coming up. We'll talk about that on Wednesday. You know, they got Philly twice before the All-Star break. You know, 2 against Detroit, I think, a Charlotte and Milwaukee. So they see Philly twice, Milwaukee before the All-Star break. So we'll see what they're made of.
You know, I when I watched that game, you know, I felt a sense of like just disjointment. And Jalen says after the fact, you know, again, we just didn't have it. Like we took like that, more or less, they squandered it and they did take some things for granted after shellacking Brooklyn and then tweeting out again another energy shifter. So now that we can barometer the Celtics by every Jalen Brown tweet or every Jalen Brown comment. But I think, you know, for those things, it's a little disappointing against a team that, as I said, I think felt like they wanted to win based on the two previous games that Boston held and embarrassed them. But you're right. Phoenix didn't play like an immaculate game. They just were a little bit tougher, and Boston was a little bit unfocused and undisciplined, unfortunately. We have still a lot more to get into. We're already 20 plus minutes in, so why don't we take a quick break here? We'll switch things up here a little bit. We'll talk about the Celtics at the coming up with the trade deadline. We'll talk a little bit about, obviously, the week ahead, another four-game week. You know, those are always fun, you know, and we'll see what's the lie ahead for the Boston Celtics here on brought to you by Ben Online here. So we'll be right back here on the Geno Time segment, Believe in Celtics. And we're back on this week's segment of Geno Time brought to you by Bet Online, Believe in Celtics. We're going to talk a little bit more about the trade deadline and the four game week ahead for the Boston Celtics. So, Gary, last week you spoke a little bit about Celtics' potential interest and what you were thinking in terms of, you know, a Terrence Ross. You know, I was like, hey, could we get into a Mo Bamba situation? Mo Bamba goes out swinging against Austin Rivers. Just a couple days after that. So that's fun. Are there any other names? Have you heard anything else kind of in the short term? Ironically, we're talking off air, and I was talking to one of the Clippers guys, and I had realized that Robert Covington had fallen out of the rotation, you know, over there as well, too. And seems like a guy Boston could maybe be interested in. Don't know what the price would be there. But are there some other names since we last spoke that you come up with, maybe heard about? I don't know how this Brooklyn trade changes anything, you know, for Boston in terms of the trade front. It probably doesn't. But just in general, any other guys out there that you think the Celtics could kick the tires on and potentially invest in?
There's a couple of guys, Warren. You know, there could be a reuniting with Kelly Olynyk, a guy who, okay, this is the thing about Utah. Utah's like, listen, like, you know, we're competing, but we're looking to also enhance our roster, prepare for the future, stock more draft picks, figure out what we're going to do with this roster. Okay. So they're in a really interesting situation in Utah. But Kelly Olynyk and Jared Vanderbilt, who's a free agent this summer, also could be available. I think Vanderbilt will fit in very nicely with this team. But what is Trader Danny and Brad doing a deal? That's going to be interesting. What's, you know, they know each other so well. How is that going to work? PJ Washington from Charlotte, he's a guy I think that the Hornets lost again today to the Magic. They're going nowhere. PJ is a restricted free agent this summer. Okay, if you look at a situation in Charlotte might be looking to clean house in terms of just like, okay, we got, first of all, LaMelo's up for that, you know, 5-year, $200 million extension, right? So Charlotte's never given one of those before. Remember, they didn't want to pay Kemba Walker and end up being, unfortunately for Kemba, a really astute move for them to pass on giving him the Supermax. But Charlotte's going to have to reach deep in you know, for Michael Jordan, Charlotte's never been a team that spent a whole lot of money in terms of coaching, in terms of players. Like, they've kind of gone on a budget.
Yep.
But they're going to have to scrap that if they want LaMelo, because I don't think LaMelo is going to take anything short than the max this summer for his rookie extension. Okay. You still have Gordon Hayward at 30 plus million one more year. You still have Terry Rozier's contract. You know, so there's some guys there that are making a good amount of money. So if you're Charlotte, PJ Washington is a guy who probably can get 12, maybe like the 4-year 48 or something like that, maybe 12 to 15 on the open market, depending on the team, because it's all as worn as we know, because none of us thought that Gordon Hayward was a max player until he was a max player. When Charlotte signed him to that 4-year, $120 million deal, and we all were like, wait a minute, hold on, you know, someone maxed. So don't think that, guys, you know, it takes one team to overpay. And it happens every year all around the league. So PJ is a guy that Charlotte's going to have to invest in eventually. Okay. Because he's a restricted free agent, a team might make him an offer. So does Charlotte decide to move Washington for maybe a first round pick? Say, hey, you next team, you, it's like the Grant Williams situation. You deal with re-signing them. And remember, they got Jalen McDaniels, a guy who I mean, the McDaniels brothers are both turning into pretty damn good players. You know, are they twins? I think they're twins. I'm not sure if they're twins. Yeah, but like, you know, Jaden in Minnesota, kind of that, you know, stretch guy, stretch four, swing man. And Jalen has been a very good player. He's a free agent this summer. But I think Charlotte, homegrown kid, wants to invest in him. So if you're the Hornets, PJ Washington could be available, because Charlotte just says, listen, we are not going to pay this guy. We want compensation. We're not going to match. It's been nice, but he doesn't help us win. So he's a guy to look at. You know, there's various guys around the league. I was told that, unfortunately for the Celtics, like, Blake Griffin just hasn't been on the floor, because they were looking for a third big, right? And they've had their options, right? DeMarcus Cousins, LaMarcus Aldridge, all these guys still trying to get back in. Dwight Howard, Hassan Whiteside, all these guys still trying to get back in. Brad chose Blake Griffin. Great locker room guy. Very humble, not complain about minutes. Of course, he'd love to play more. But I think Mazzulla said to himself, okay, I really don't want to use this guy very often. Maybe because of his skill set has declined. We all know, like, he's lost so much athleticism. It's tough to watch. You know, he's one of those guys, you look at Blake and now he's become kind of a fan favorite and shoot the three, Blake, and all that. And this guy was a dominant player for a decade, man. Like, it's hard to watch that.
It is.
That's the part of professional sports that we've seen, you know, Emmitt Smith play for the Cardinals. We've seen all these greats that play until you peel the uniform off of them. But I think that they didn't get what they wanted out of Blake. And then I think, and then, you know, you tell me what you think, Warren. The Cornette minutes are getting a little too much. I think they like him, but they're putting him in situations where it's like, they don't want to play Robert 35 minutes. Al's 36 years old. So they don't want to play those guys. So they play in Luke, and Luke is doing some things at nice at times, and other times, you know, he gets in situations where he's 2 feet from the basket and he's looking to pass because he's not really a scoring big. He doesn't have that oomph that we talked about, I'm 7 feet, I'm dunking on your ass. Like, he doesn't have that kind of, you know, but he does the little things. So I think they're looking for a third big to fill up those minutes. And then the wing position, you know, when we talk about Terrence Ross or something like that, they have to ask themselves, is Hauser someone that can help us, or is he, can Jalen and Jason play? Are they going to soak up the minutes with Grant and Malcolm and Derek to where you don't need another swing man? I happen to think they do need a dude off the bench other than Malcolm that can score, like that can hit a three, because Grant has just not had a really good stretch. I'm not saying you can't depend on Grant, but I would depend on Grant to do the little things, not the big things at times. Hauser, you know, he got off to a great start, but I think 30% from three in the last 2 months, plus months, he since November, he has not been good. So I think that they're looking to fill backup center, and there's guys out there off the street that they can sign for veterans minimum and just roll the dice. They can wait for the buyout market, or, you know, a guy like Nerlens Noel could be, is available. Still has athleticism. not the smartest guy in terms of like not, you know, not a guy you would want to play heavy minutes, but a guy who can block some shots, provide some rim protection, rebound, and he can still dunk. He's a young, old guy. You know that guy. You
know, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, you know, what is Nerlens, 27? But he's still, it's like he's on the downside. He never really developed into that. Remember, it was supposed to be him and Anthony Davis in New Orleans before he got traded to Philadelphia. It was supposed to be the dynamic duo, and Nerlens was supposed to be a real difference maker. But I think he could still play. So I think the Celtics have some options here. They have some big man options, and Nerlens is from from Boston area. Now, what would Detroit want? You know, Detroit's another team headed down to headed to Lotteryville, along with Charlotte and, you know, San Antonio and Houston. I think second round picks would do it, or you know, Justin Jackson's contract could be moved. So there's a lot of options there, Warren, that the Celtics could pursue to get a little bit better. I don't think they're gonna like, oh, Jacob Poeltl. I don't think they're gonna package like three, you know, Grant, Pritchard, and Gallinari, unless they're gonna get a guy who's gonna, okay, that puts them over the top.
Yeah, absolutely over the top.
You don't make a deal, as you know, in this league, Warren, just to make a deal. I think we've talked about Dallas and Brooklyn. Was that a deal just to make a deal? I think that might have been in that category where neither team's going to get considerably better. I think the Celtics like their chemistry. They like what they have, but they know they need a few tweaks.
I'm going to throw a couple of names at you, you know, just, you know, kind of rapid fire. And you just tell me yeah or nay. And it's obviously hard to deal with Toronto, you know, same division in the whole nine or whatever. But they should be another team that be potentially being sellers. You know, I think you've mentioned Thaddeus Young before. What about Chris Boucher? Either one of those guys have any, would they fit or make any hay for Boston? Would that, you know, float their boat in any way?
Yeah, Chris is a big who can stretch the floor and shoot the three. He's a little inconsistent. I don't know if they're really high on Chris Boucher. And Thaddeus Young is a wily old veteran who knows how to still can do some things. I would think the Celtics probably be more interested in Thad Young for his value. And obviously what he's done against them over the years. Mm-hmm. So I would say more of a Thad Young than Boucher. It all depends on the salary. The question is with this is, okay, the guy makes 11 or 12 million. You're going to have to, okay, Gallinari's got to be in that deal. Then you're going to have to, what, Grant? So are the sellers willing to give up Grant and just say, okay, Grant, like, it's been great. You've been a model citizen. You've been a good player. You've improved over the years. But we think we can get slightly better. And we're going to move you. And then the same thing with like a Peyton Pritchard. I don't know. That's a very good question with whether the salaries would match and whether the Celtics are willing to give up like Grant. Or I think Peyton, they probably would, knowing it's all about this year. But look at the salaries. Boucher makes $12 million, and he's signed for two more years after this. I'm thumbs down on that. Thad Young makes $8 million, and he signed for another additional year. $8 million is not that trade exception, so now you would have to pair Gallinari, maybe Peyton, and then Toronto's going to be like, no, we want some draft capital also. Are you willing to do that with your division opponent and for Thad Young? You know, that's the thing. A lot of these guys that Toronto has available, Warren, make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay, if you look at, like, you know, Precious Achiuwa doesn't. He makes 2.8, but I don't think he's available. Right. You know.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it as realistic, as possible.
OG Anunoby, everybody's talking about him. He makes 17. At 18 next year, like, and they're going to want, you know, significant capital. Gary Trent Jr. makes 17.5 and Van Vliet makes 21. So if you're looking at the Toronto roster, and I think I said very intriguing possibilities, I think the guys you'd be interested in, like, I think they'd be interested in like a Precious, but Toronto's like trying to trade a guy that makes 2.8.
That doesn't move their needle at all.
No, not at all. And they're not moving Scotty Barnes. Otto Porter's out for the year as usual. Kim Birch, makes 6.5. Like the guy, Boucher, I think if he was expiring, but do you want 2+ years of Chris Boucher? Like that's a real commitment.
All right. Hey, we're here just to have some conversation.
No.
You know,
I get it.
I know.
I think Toronto, because remember, he was a free agent this past summer. Toronto just signed him. It's re-signed him, brought him back, And the same thing with Thaddeus Young. They gave Thaddeus $8 million. That's a lot for Thaddeus Young to me. Maybe he fits into their mid-level or whatever. But I think the Celtics have to decide whether Gallinari is going to come back or whether his trade, his contract at 6.6 or whatever becomes expendable and they can include that in the deal. And I think they would for the right player.
So what about the guy and two more? And then, we'll keep it pushing here. The guy I mentioned earlier, Robert Covington. And what about Milwaukee and Serge Ibaka? Covington is at about 12-ish right now. I think he's got one more year left on his deal. So this year and next year. Serge is at a veteran minimum. So would you just be better bringing off a Dwight Howard or DeMarcus Cousins off the street than Serge Ibaka at this point? But quick thoughts on those guys potentially, Serge Ibaka or Robert Covington.
Yeah, Covington's a guy like then it becomes like who do you package for Covington? Because that becomes basically are you willing to trade Gallinari and Grant for Robert Covington? That's interesting. I think that's interesting. I don't say absolutely not, but I think you got to think, Warren, why isn't he playing in L.A.? Right. What's going on in L.A. that makes him not playable when he's making $11 million? And Ibaka, I was told that he's got nothing left in terms of, like, an attractive – he's in that Dwight Howard, Hassan Whiteside, LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMarcus Cousins category. Like, he might give you something, but do you want to kind of disrupt chemistry? Do you? Because obviously now, as we've seen, Ibaka's coming in wherever he is with some expectations to play.
Right.
Because if he was a quote-unquote – and I'm going to say he's not a team guy, so his guy, but if he was this – if he was a Blake Griffin type, he'd be like, you know what, I'm on a championship team,
Yeah, why rock the boat?
Yeah, I'm, and he's already got he won a ring in Toronto, right? Like he was on that 19 Raptors team. So he's got a ring, but he's like, hey, this team trying to win another ring. Let me just, I'm not playing how I want, but let me be a good guy here, cheer on my teammates, try to get another ring, and then I'll figure out next year, I'll figure out personally where the hell I want to play because it's not going to be here. He instead is now at home like, no, I'm waiting to get waived or traded. So what is – because I just think talking to folks around the Celtics, the third center is not going to play all that much. And so is Ibaka going to be okay with, hey, we need you for 11 minutes tonight, 6 the next night? Like, or is he going to be like, no, I'm Serge Ibaka. I don't do those. I don't do spot minutes. So I think that's a big concern about Ibaka is what does he have left and is he going to willing to be a team guy? I remember a few years ago, Warren, when they had David Lee and they kind of and they ended up moving him or whatever. And David Lee was that veteran guy. I've seen it over the year, Keith Bogans. You don't want the pouty guy in the corner. I should be playing over these young guys. That's what they don't want. That's what they all out want to avoid is the pouty guy. And every team, a lot of teams have those guys, where they just, I should be playing. And you don't need that type of chemistry disruption in Boston.
I think you're right, 1,000%, especially then if you have to extract any type of draft capital, even if it's second rounders. If that's the case, then you wait for that guy to get bought out.
You wait for Serge to get bought out. You talk to him and say, listen, Serge, if you can't do this, we get it. We'll move forward and you can, find another team where you can play 20, 25 minutes a game. I don't know of that team. That's a good team. You know, not a bad team. You want to play, you know, you want to play 30 minutes for a bad team. That's some guys do. They're good being in situations where they get a lot of run and they're not winning. They just want to play. Other guys are like,
I don't know where he can. I don't think he can get 30 minutes in San Antonio right now.
Yeah. Like, so I don't know what Ibaka wants in terms. Like, I thought in Toronto the last years, like watch him in a bubble. Like, I thought he had turned into more of a perimeter guy. The shot, I block you. Like, he wasn't that menacing defender as he was. I thought him and Gasol both kind of were declining at that particular time. But I still thought that he could bring it from the perimeter at times. He could still be a rim protector, but you don't want to rely on lots of Serge Ibaka. You know, this ain't the Oklahoma City days. But I don't know what happened in Milwaukee. All of a sudden, I just see him. He's not playing. He's at the end of the bench. They're looking for, you know, they're like, I guess Bobby Portis kind of took those backup center minutes in addition to being kind of, you know, and you know, Brooke Lopez kept, you know, like they don't really have that backup five. So I'm like, well, but Ibaka wasn't playing either. Yeah. So it could be a personal problem with him and Budenholzer. But I think when you bring a guy like that into such a young locker room, that's a real risk.
So we'll end the Celtics trade speculation, if you will, as I'm just kind of spitballing some names out here, trying to be as realistic as possible. You know, a couple of days here before the deadline, we'll see what Boston gets into, either from the front court or the wing position situation. Lots of names, as you alluded to, especially the buyout market could be more lucrative for Boston long term instead of having to give up any type of draft equity or capital. We'll kind of close the show out here. 4-game week, as alluded to, kind of coming up. Pistons, Sixers.
Hornets, Grizzlies.
And Grizzlies on Sunday, right? That's Super Bowl Sunday,
yeah.
So two of those teams are problematic, obviously, for various reasons. Philadelphia, at that point, could also be right. Well, they already are right. I think they're a game behind right now in terms of the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Pistons seem to always give Boston a little bit of trouble as well, too, especially in Detroit. Has not been great for them down there, despite whatever iteration of them that they have going on. Charlotte, we've already seen a couple of times, couple of you know, interesting games against them. Then again, obviously closing out against Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies. Just your thoughts for this 4-game week here. If they make a deal, you know, on the trade deadline, could potentially be shorthanded. You know, in that Friday game, I wouldn't expect it to last until Sunday, but potentially if there's anything were to go down. Just your thoughts here on the 4-game week. Obviously, again, the biggest game against Philadelphia 76ers on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, I think a big week. And one, you got to get those Detroit and Charlotte games. Like, don't mess around with those guys.
Yeah.
Like, they should be pissed on Monday night in Detroit. Like, they just lost. Like, Detroit's not a good team. Detroit's slipping. They lost the other night to Phoenix. You know, they're not playing good basketball. They don't have Cade Cunningham. You know, they're kind of Jaden Ivey and just and a couple of other guys just trying to, you know, and Bogdanovich, and, you know, whether he's going to be a Piston past Thursday, we'll see. But that's a game you take seriously. You can't look forward to Philly. The Philly game, I think they're just going to have to play their best ball. I think if you go 3-1, that's a good week, because I think Memphis is going to come in with something to prove. But, you know, the Grizzlies have not been good over the last month now. You know, but they should be fully healthy with Ja and those guys coming in on Super Bowl Sunday. So a very interesting week, a good test. We'll see what the Celtics have usually responded, you know, Warren, this year to adversity or playing bad games. They've usually responded with good stretch of the basketball. We'll see if they can snap out of this, because you could say that they got lucky against the Lakers. You know, they blew out the Nets, but, you know, they're still reeling to me from that Orlando-Miami loss and then the loss to the Knicks. Like, you know, they're still got some kinks to work out, especially offensively. So we'll see how they approach Detroit. Make it easy, not on yourself. Make it to where Jason and Jaylen don't have to play the entire fourth quarter, or Jason's not playing 48 minutes to get a 3-point win. Do yourself a favor. Don't mess around with these guys, and then get ready for Philly. And we'll see what happens Thursday with the trade deadline, whether they get kind of, you know, refigured and reformed, and then get maybe, you know, rejuvenated with a new guy coming in. We'll see about that.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead and cut it here short. I mean, again, we went long here. The Kyrie news kind of threw the whole show into our rears, and we have to kind of touch on that. But again, you know, we'll see how the Celtics land with this four-game week. Again, obviously big game against the Philadelphia 76ers, and hopefully they'll be up to that test. I agree 1,000%. Got to get those games against Detroit and Charlotte specifically, regardless of even if you're a little bit shorthanded, you know, on a Friday night at home. But this is a Celtics team, and we're going to talk about this offense. I have some conversations, some things we need to get off my chest as well, too. But we'll save that till next week and see where they land. He is the great Gary Washburn. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, G Washburn Globe. Follow me on Twitter at Shaw Sports NBA, Shaw Sports NBA. And again, it's been another great episode of Believe in Celtics brought to you by Bet Online. We will catch you after the trade deadline. Woo! NBA continues to give, bro. Good catching up with you, G-Money. Talk to you soon.
Always, Warren.